Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from Spokane Valley, Washington, soon to be Liberty State, brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong, about our hope not being in man but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer but moving to action, about Luke 17, 20 through 21. Now, having been questioned by the Pharisees as to when the kingdom of God was coming, he answered them and said, "The kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed, nor will they say, 'Look, here it is,' or 'There it is.' For behold, the kingdom of God is inside you," or in your midst in some translations. Last night, we had a great presentation on persecuted Christians around the world. I'm going to get to that here in a second. But one of the most impactful things that I've come across in a while is a quote from a Chinese house church leader, Brother Yun, in his book, The Heavenly Man, pages 308 to 309. And here's the quote. "In China, Christians are persecuted with beatings and imprisonment. In the West, Christians are persecuted by the words of other Christians. This new kind of spiritual persecution was no easier than physical persecution in China. Just different." There was a great article out recently by Understanding the Threat on moral courage being tougher than physical courage. And there's a quote in there by Robert F. Kennedy. Quote, "Few men are willing to brave the disapproval of their fellows, the censure of their colleagues, the wrath of their society. Moral courage is a rarer commodity than bravery in battle or great intelligence. Yet it is the one essential, vital quality for those who seek to change the world, which yields most painfully to change." And so this quote by Brother Yun, and I'm going to say it again here in a little while too, it is just really hits at the heart of what it means to be a Christian. Now, there's some people that claim to be Christians, you know, and will not actually act that way. They'll watch a movie like Tortured for Christ and be angry at the end of it instead of just absolutely awed at what that man went through for his faith and how he still showed love to the communist guards beating him. This was Pastor Richard Wurmbrand, a Romanian Lutheran pastor. And after World War II, when the Russians invaded, they turned it into a hellhole, quite literally. And they arrested pastors like Pastor Wurmbrand, tortured them for years. Not 1 or 2 years. You're talking over a decade. And when he was finally released, he started Voice of the Martyrs, which called attention to the persecution of Christians around the world. Another organization, Save the Persecuted Christians, is calling attention as well. And last night I detailed half a dozen instances. I had more, but I didn't want to bore everybody. I think it's important to state facts of Christian persecution that's actually happening here in the United States of America as well. Now, 90% of the presentation last night was focused on foreign persecution, or persecution outside the United States of America, places like Nigeria, places like China, places like North Korea. But there is persecution happening here in the United States of America. And as Brother Yun testified to, this is persecution in the West. And he called it that, and he had the right to call it that, a man who was beaten and imprisoned and tortured. And some people say it's too strong to use the persecution word in America. Well, Brother Yun doesn't think so. And I don't think so either. The thought police that are out there right now that are trying to make it so that you self-censor and that you don't talk about things, or you're afraid to talk about things because you might lose your business, or you might be sanctioned, or you might run into problems in your social club or whatever. That's tyranny, folks. And let's be very blunt. It is aimed at Christians. And there's people out there who try to call themselves Christians who are actually turning on other Christians. And this happened in the former Soviet Union. 1963, there was a split between the state church and the confessing church. In fact, we have a picture of that with our some of our family members in it, in the woods where they would worship, trying to hide from the KGB. I was talking to my sister-in-law the other day, and she told me a fantastic story. You know, she was young. She was with her mom, and they're inside this really cramped, packed house. It's so hot in there, and they're doing that because they're hiding from the KGB. Well, she's a young kid. She passed out. So her mom, my mother-in-law, took my sister-in-law home. And 30 minutes later, the KGB found the church, raided it, and arrested most everybody. Now, the mentality that leads to that great evil of socialism is tied directly to atheism. And so that's why you see atheists being very strong sympathizers with communism and socialism, because Karl Marx was very clear in Communist Manifesto, Chapter 2, that there should be an abolition of religion and eternal truths and morality. He later went on very clearly to say, you know, that was core to socialism. And it's interesting that, you know, you can miss this. You can say, it might be taken out of context. It's not taken out of context. But you can miss this because it's not taught in schools anymore. And very few people are educated on where these primary sources are to actually bring them to light for the public. Another example of this was Vladimir Lenin. And you can actually go online and you can read his telegrams and some of the things that he said in his telegrams, which are just, they're absolutely unbelievable. But Vladimir Lenin in 1909 said that the combating of religion cannot be confined to abstract ideological preaching, and it must not be reduced to such preaching. It must be linked to the concrete practice of the class movement, which aims at eliminating the social roots of religion. Well, what are those social roots of religion? Or where, better yet, the better question is, where and what is the repository for the values, traditions, and culture of a people? Well, it's people. So when he says something like that, what he's really advocating is for the elimination of people. And so in 1909, he's not in power, but as soon as he comes into power, you see this borne out very, very clearly. 10 August 1918. I want to read a communique. This comes from the Black Book of Communism. Comrades, the kulak uprisings in your five districts must be crushed without pity. The interests of the whole revolution demand such actions, for the final struggle with the kulaks has now begun. You must make an example of these people. Now, what is a kulak? It was the middle class. It was the productive members of society. Number one, hang. I mean publicly hang so that people see it, at least 100 kulaks. And then he actually uses a swear word, and known bloodsuckers. Number two, publish their names. Number three, seize all their grain. Okay, so by the way, number two, that was the 1918 equivalent of doxing, okay? Number three, seize all their grain. Okay, seizing property rights. Number four, single out hostages per my instructions in yesterday's telegram. P.S. Find tougher people. If you have people that are too weak to persecute people that way. Here's another one that was very interesting. This was from August 15th of 1918, and he had written this one to D.T. Petrichuk. In case of need, you will be given permission to use a direct line. My advice is gradually take steps toward disarming and expelling demoralized units and hooligan elements. So in other words, he was advocating for the disarming of veterans. Why? Because that was what stood between him and victory. And you can read some of these things and just go through them, and you get this flavor for him literally fulfilling what he believed was purging society of the repository of the culture, tradition, and heritage of a people. So when you hear people say, alleged Christians, Marxist sympathizers, when you hear them say things like, well, these Christians are bad, you know, we can't tolerate them. And then they get together with avowed Marxist organizations. They are literally moving in the direction of what socialist countries always do, step by step. They disarm the populace, they ridicule Christians, and then eventually it turns into overt persecution. And that's historic. Nobody can really refute, well, nobody that's educated can really refute that. So what do? First of all, we need to pray for our Christian brothers and sisters overseas. We need to also not only pray for them, we need to pray for the people persecuting them too. And we need to pray for the people here. Forgive them, bless them. And in this country, stand against their genocidal, because it is, socialist system. We hate the system. We can love the man. And that brings me now to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front out of China. As we detailed last night, China has implemented something called the return to zero policy. In other words, they want zero Christians in China. Now, just for context, 5 years ago, only one country, North Korea, was ranked in the extreme category for its level of persecution of Christians. This year, 11 countries score enough to fit that category. So China's return to zero policy in April 2018, part of that was to ban online sales of the Bible. Now, Wayne Cordiero, there's a great video out there where he talks about when he's talked to some of these Chinese house church leaders that they were memorizing the Bible on scraps of paper because they didn't have enough Bibles to go around. And if you got caught with it, if you got caught with it, there was a penalty. In addition to that, in 2018, you had early Reign Covenant Church pastor Wang and his wife arrested for inciting subversion of state power. And now notice how the Guardian article and some of these people out there use these similar terms, that they're inciting subversion of state power. Well, look at Christianity is not supposed to be subservient to the state. Jesus Christ is the Lord of all, period. And so when you have centralized state control, they realize that Christians are going to obey a higher authority. And if they're acting in a manner that is depriving people of their God-given, unalienable rights to life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same, Christians will stand against that. And so that's why they go after them. And they use terms like this, and now we're hearing it in America, where people who claim to be Christians but really cannot be based on their actions, and again, God knows their heart, but they use these same terms, and they did back then too. All right, also, China, 240,000 recorded examples of persecution in China in 2017, up roughly from 48,000 in 2016. That's even higher, obviously, now today. In China, they want to make sure that they don't just have this social credit score system, but they want to have 170 million security cameras, 600 million CCTV cameras by 2020 to keep watch on people. This is happening in our time. Also on this same topic, Nigeria is becoming a new caliphate effectively, and Christians are being slaughtered there tremendously. It's probably one of the worst countries in the world now in that regard. Next, I'm going to move down to, on the international front, Poland, which did... I love what the Polish people are doing right now. Poland brings home 100 tons of gold from the Bank of England. So it's about half of its gold, apparently, but they brought it home because they don't trust the Bank of England and the globalists. It's around half of Warsaw's holding in the UK. It was transferred back to the National Bank of Poland. What a great idea to maintain your sovereignty by maintaining control over your gold. Also, in Hungary, Viktor Orban, Europe can only be saved by returning to Christianity. So you've got leaders in Eastern Europe now very overtly saying that there must be a return to Christianity, a return to the source of its real values, its Christian identity. That is what Viktor Orban said, I believe it was last week. And this is part of his speech, too. Those we are helping now can give us the greatest help in saving Europe, the prime minister said in his speech. We are giving persecuted Christians. Well, there's that word again. We are giving persecuted Christians what they need, homes, hospitals, and schools, and we receive in return what Europe needs most, a Christian faith, love, and perseverance, end quote. What a great speech. This is coming from the Hungary Journal. Literally, you can go look this up and read the speech for yourself. There's a lot of other great nuggets in there as well. All right, also on the international front, the Financial Times, actually, before I get there, I'm going to go to the Middle East very quickly. Right now, going through the Israeli Knesset is a bill that would allow for the annexation of the Jordan Valley. Part of the Jordan Valley is Qumran. Pay attention to that. The U.S. DOD now is mulling sending 7,000 troops back to the Middle East because of this threat from Iran. Can we please have a constitutional debate about it and a declaration of war according to the Constitution? But we clearly see that this is where it's headed. All right. Next on the international front, the Financial Times. Okay, there's a couple of media outlets. The Atlantic is a mainstream liberal media outlet. They dedicated an entire magazine to the next American Civil War. And notice who's talking about this, by the way, okay? People that believe in the right of self-defense versus these people who keep talking about civil war and ginning this up. But in addition to that, the Financial Times came out with an article that actually advocates for UN intervention in the United States to, quote, save the democracy, end quote. And that's part of the problem in the system is certain people groups don't feel represented and therefore they feel their rights are being taken away from by the majority. Well, that's what happens in a democracy, and we aren't in a democracy. We don't have a democracy. We have a republic. The majority can never vote away the rights of the minority because we have rule of law. The right to life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same is always protected, regardless of who's in charge. And what the Marxists are trying to do is throw that out. And I'm going to be very clear on this point. That is sedition, to try and overthrow the Constitution of the United States of America. And so this article by the Financial Times goes on even further and advocates for a rewriting of the U.S. Constitution, not by elected representatives, but by something akin, and these are their words, loyal yurga, effectively an Afghanistan tribal council type of model to rewrite the U.S. Constitution. So UN intervention and rewriting the U.S. Constitution, folks, that is sedition. And this is a mainstream liberal publication, the Financial Times. And people said years ago, you know, hey, this will never happen. And here it is right now. You can go look it up yourself. It's quite amazing, actually. That brings us now to the national front. Speaker Pelosi has now asked the House to impeach Trump. citing she needs to be faithful to the Constitution. Whatever. She's trying to foment chaos in this country. That's what she's trying to do. And this is what Democrats do. They project onto you how they are themselves, right? They really do. And what they're afraid of is people that stand up and say, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to abide by the Constitution and our God-given unalienable rights. We're not going to try to throw it out and rewrite it with loyal yurgas and whatever else that these guys try to dream up. We're not going to do that. We're going to abide by it. And that scares them. Because they ultimately understand that in America, the final check and balance in this entire system is the people. Also on the national front, there is now a new grant to research the connection between military service and violent extremism. This is back in October. I had missed it until now, so I'm talking about it now. This comes to us from the Dvorak Peck School of Social Work. There it is. This idea that if you're a veteran, that somehow you must be, you know, as soon as you get in the military and you have service, that there must be some connection between your service and extremist beliefs is so offensive. And this is what it says. That they want to do this grant to understand the factors that lead to these terrifying events, and this is referring to mass violence. Let's not talk about the fact that a lot of these were jihadis, okay, but whatever. And why members of the military may be susceptible to extremist beliefs may help prevent future violence by veterans and others. So now veterans are just poor little veterans susceptible to extremist beliefs, which they try to define as anybody that believes the Constitution means what it says or the Bible means what it says. Unbelievable. So check that out if you have chance and educate your friends and family. Then, this coming to us from Clarion Project, the mainstream media now compares Trump supporters to ISIS followers. Okay, so now they've attacked the veterans now. Now they've got to attack the Trump supporters, all of us. And notice what they're doing here with these comparisons to ISIS. Okay? And here's the quote. You know the behaviors that I'm seeing here, and this is anecdotal and very similar to the way that ISIS members are. End quote. This was Malcolm Nance on Hardball with Chris Matthews. Okay, so they are trying to paint people that believe in the Constitution and freedom and liberty as ISIS, in other words, hateful people that should be wiped off the face of the earth, should be imprisoned. And that's what they're doing. And they're setting this up. And ultimately, they're going to try to paint people as haters so they can use red flag laws against them. This is already happening where Antifa has posted, and I have screenshots of this, has posted advocating using CPS as a weapon against Trump supporters. They're going to try to use this kind of painting and advocate the use of red flag laws against Trump supporters as well. Folks, if you have not been involved in politics, if you haven't been involved in elections and haven't voted, you're quite literally allowing these people to do this. You need to get involved and stop this insanity that we see happening. And you can read about this article on the Clarion Project. All right, also on the national front, DHS is saying that it wants to have a database to hold biometric data on 229 million Americans without a warrant, clearly, by 2022. So this is total surveillance. It's coming to us from Technocracy News. Literally no citizen can or will see the danger of total surveillance until they understand technocracy, and I totally agree with that sentiment. Quite literally watching every single thing that we do. Also on the national front, William Perry Penley, the acting BLM chief, has called for a deference to local sheriffs. Finally, trying to defuse years of abuse of the federal government of Western landowners. Great job. Another great Trump appointment. Also on the national front, coming to us from AMA land, but the article originally was from Gun Owners of America. 19 states have counties with Second Amendment sanctuaries in place. And if you look at it, the predominant amount of counties that are Second Amendment sanctuaries are in the Western United States. You got a lot of Washington, all of Idaho, part of Oregon, all of Wyoming, and weirdly, Montana doesn't have any yet. I guess they just don't think they need it. I don't know. But this noncompliance against unconstitutional laws is spreading. It's spreading. All right. Lastly, and this is an interesting one. This kind of crosses the international and national front. This comes to us from the New American Magazine. The United Nations may be used in military action to enforce a climate agenda, including inside the United States. A Danish academic has stated that the United Nations may use force against countries defying its climate change mandates. Ole Waver, a prominent University of Copenhagen international relations professor, is the one that said this and is advocating it. So here you have, again, this advocating of UN military action to enforce something that a lot of us believe is a hoax, that the science does not support what these people are claiming. So instead of having a debate, apparently, they want to send in troops. That's kind of scary. All right, on the regional front, Seattle effectively won partly in court anyway, and is enjoining the enforcement of the $30 car tabs because it doesn't fit downtown Seattle values. They're rejecting the west of the state. In fact, they're now advocating the Seattle Times for the state of King. Great. Now we agree there should be a Liberty State vote. General election 2020, the vote for Liberty State should be on the ballot in every county as an advisory vote, which is legal. There's an AG opinion on that. Should be on the ballot in every single county in Washington. So they can have their state of King. We can have our Liberty State. Everybody's going to be happy. And they can have their mass transit dream. Unbelievable, but true. So why not? Why not have an experiment? You guys can follow socialism in downtown Seattle. Now, here's the deal, though. If you collapse, you can't come crawling back. And we will try the free markets over here in Eastern Washington, Liberty State, and part of Southwest Washington, and maybe even Northwest Washington. And we'll try that. And we'll see which one turns out better. That's what the Founding Fathers wanted with states. And I would guarantee there'd be less persecution of Christians in Liberty State. On the local front, so last night I mentioned we had the Save the Persecuted Christians presentation. A pastor who was there, who I believe was persecuted, we're going to talk about that here a little bit later in the show. But KXLY comes out with an article. Now, look, at 90% of the presentation was on persecution of Christians in other countries. Now, I did mention some persecution here in the United States, and I think it's germane. But quite literally, they come out with an article that's just horrific. So quite literally, KXLY persecuted the Save the Persecuted Christians presentation. Wow. Also on the local front, and this is very fascinating. Okay, pay attention to this. This comes to us from LifeSite News. This is a great news site, by the way. Democrat strategist creates fake local news sites in key states to sway votes away from Trump. A Democrat strategist and founder of political activist organization has helped launch a new media company hosting digital local papers aimed at influencing key swing state voters in 2020. U.S. presidential election, according to a Bloomberg report. Okay, so they're creating a fake news site to intentionally influence the election. at the local level. Boy, does that sound familiar to Spokane. Yikes. Folks, wake up out there and help some of these local elected officials wake up as well so that we can preserve our great God-honoring constitutional republic for another generation. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for me, that's been praying for Victoria. And please go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. And if you want to keep us on the air, you can go to VoteShea.com. And remember, Patriot Radio is also on iTunes and Podbean. Well, my guest today is going to talk a little bit about some local Christian persecution that I believe, I don't think that's hyperbole. I really think that that's the case. Jorge Ramos of the Pacific Justice Institute, which now has an office here in Washington State over on the west side. Jorge, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Great to be with you, Matt.
So tell me a little bit about the case and Pastor Afshin and what, you know, kind of what happened and what led up to the final disposition this week.
Sure. So this took place on June 15th of this year. The local Spokane library was hosting a drag queen story hour, and Pastor Afshin decided to go in his capacity as a pastor to, I guess, witness the event, pray over the attendees, just be a presence there. He showed up with no posters, no T-shirts or anything to be noticed as a protester. But as he approached the library, they had about 10 police officers in a row who they were already separating individuals, which they called the pro-LGBTQ side the counter-protesters. They were set up on the library lawn and had the sidewalk closest to the library, and they set up a protest zone across the street where they were putting people against the event. And Afshin was in the library parking lot on a small grass plot, and he was there. He was asking to go in the library, but he made them aware that he was, I guess, in opposition to the event, but not there to actively protest. He was not planning to preach or yell across the street or anything like that. He actually asked to go in the library, at which point a police officer told him, absolutely not, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he asked twice, and both times he was summarily rejected, even held back, nothing aggressive, but hand was placed on him and said, you're not going in there. So he returned back to the grass spot, at which point they gave him one last chance. They said, move across the street or we're arresting you. And he said, you're going to have to arrest me. And so they did, and they threw him into this small little trailer that they had there. He was forced to stay in there in handcuffs for about, I think, 3 or 4 hours until the event was over. And at that point, he contacted us, and we filed a motion to dismiss, and we were in front of Judge Staub here last October 29th. And she just put her ruling down December 2nd, dismissing the case.
I want to really, I mean, you have a little bit better perspective as far as cases are concerned, as, you know, Western United States or nationally. Is this happening around the country, or is this kind of more of a one-off, or, you know, what can we expect, or what should we know about the rest of the country in regards to Christian pastors showing up and being arrested at different things?
Yeah, this is actually something, and you could talk to the president, Brad, but they've been shocked at how many cases they're getting, not just pastors, but evangelists who are just out there preaching the gospel, spreading the word, handing out tracts, minding their business, usually even contacting us, making sure they're inside the boundaries of the law before they go out there. And, for example, here in Washington State, I'm representing an evangelist in Kennewick. He was arrested cited outside a Planned Parenthood for what they claimed was an unnecessary noise violation. That is the name of their municipal code there. Yeah, and so as you can see, it's funny to even say, but I went and argued and got this case dismissed last year in February, and they had the audacity to cite him for the exact same charge, and I will probably hear back maybe tomorrow or at the latest Monday. The judge was pretty shocked that the prosecution went forward with the same charge that he had just dismissed a year ago, so I'm hoping that comes back. That's just an example. We have cases, Texas, I believe, California, Oregon, all across the country. And, of course, we're just one of the organizations, but all the other ones also are in this battle.
Right, but you guys are, I mean, you really are showing up and you have great results. You know, people say, you know, the persecution or the word is too strong to use in America. But I started the show off with a quote from Brother Yun of China, who said that there is persecution in the West. And it's just different than the beatings and torture and stuff that they experience in China. And this anti-Christian sentiment that we see out there today is really coming to the fore. And you can see it not just in things like this, but we're seeing it online. We're seeing it in how people are treated in their jobs. If you could tell a little bit about that and what PJI's experience is, you know, at least understanding the problem or hearing about the problem or getting people calling about potential cases around the country.
Sure. And I think this case is actually, we can go a little deeper to show what's happening, because it was covered in the news, but there was SWAT on the roof. The presence at the library was directed towards Christians. So there's this I guess, vision or stereotyping of Christians as the violent side who show up ready to, I don't know, if you have SWAT team, you clearly think something bad is going to happen, and they set up the barricade to protect the LGBTQ side. So by inference, they are saying the Christians are the dangerous ones. So this is now, this goes out to employees who share their views on traditional marriage or abortion. They're instantly labeled bigots, or, you know, they're worried that they're going to have to acquiesce to something that's going on right now in Washington and across the country, which there have been some successful lawsuits. It's the compelled speech, where teachers are being forced to refer to biologically male or female in their preferred gender. Teachers are standing up to this and saying, I can't go against God and what he says in the Bible, and they are dismissed, and people jump in and file lawsuits. And I am representing a teacher in something of that matter here in Washington. No lawsuit has been filed, but I've been contacted by a lot of teachers, so they're concerned about this issue.
Well, you know, and it's interesting that, you know, the Washington State Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, says very clearly there's an absolute freedom of conscience in all matters of religious sentiment. Article 26 says there shall be perfect toleration of religious sentiment. But it's as if that doesn't exist anymore in the Constitution, and it's completely ignored roundly. And not just by, you know, organizations. It's ignored also by the courts sometimes. And, you know, I mean, this is kind of a scary place, you know, that we're heading to in our history. What do you think is going to be happening in the next 3 years? Could you give the listeners a little bit of I'm not going to say a guess, but just what do you expect to happen in the next 3 years? What direction is it going to take?
Absolutely. So I was at a big Christian Legal Society conference this past month, and I got to hear a preeminent constitutional law attorney who, he pretty much sleeps at the Supreme Courthouse defending our religious freedoms. His name is Luke Goodrich. He wrote a great book. And, you know, he actually wanted to give people hope. Right now, because of all these, I would say, government agencies, law enforcement overstepping their boundaries, courts are being forced to set lines and boundaries on what our rights are. And, you know, the Constitution says what it says, and right now the federal courts, the Supreme Court, are getting loaded with conservative judges and judges who support our views, our values, and he wanted just to give more hope. You know, right now we may go through a lot of persecution, but it could be light at the end of the tunnel for us.
Yeah, and I like that. We are seeing people wake up to what's happening, and beginning to act outside the four walls of the church and spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. I mean, I think it's actually kind of a good problem if you have evangelists who are actually out there on the street evangelizing, and some of them are being arrested. That's terrible. But the fact that they're out there and it's becoming a much larger number, I think that is encouraging.
It is, especially because the public and other Christians are being made aware and seeing that, you know, this is a serious thing, agencies, and I can say right now, though we got a dismissal, I actually got hinted at that the attorneys here in Spokane are going to challenge it. So they're not just backing down. You know, they think this is serious enough to continue pursuing when I'm sure they have more important matters, and we have a judge saying that they overstepped here. And it's just really concerning to that end. But again, I think there is hope.
Yeah, I do too. I really do. But it's organizations. I mean, we do have to stand on the line. We just can't sit back and be apathetic. We do have to stand on the line. And it's organizations like PJI that are doing that. Are you seeing any moves toward the homeschool community? Are you seeing any attempts maybe even in Washington State or California or Oregon to really come against the homeschool community? Because there has been an exodus in recent years of public school because of a lot of the controversy in public school. People are either homeschooling, sending kids to private school, doing some online learning. What are you seeing in that vein?
You know, I think we're always wary of state agencies trying to implement certain procedures or policies that would infringe on homeschooling parents and organizations that help with that. I know in Washington State, I've been contacted by a concerned parents and also child care agencies who see the state, and these would be Christian private ones, that are, you know, they're trying to require things like gingerbread person, you know, teaching things like that, gender type curriculum. So it is something that's happening. It hasn't blown up in Washington State at all yet. I think there's still protections there for homeschoolers, but it's definitely something on our radar and something we would help people with if they are in a situation of that. Like,
yeah, and I think too that the other avenue you're seeing online quite a bit of vitriol. Some people are having their privacy invaded. You're seeing Christians doxed now. What can Christians do in this environment right now? What should they be doing to take precautions, whether they're a homeschool parent or maybe just an activist, or, you know, they're really involved in the pro-life abolition movement, or they're just a pastor? What should they be doing to protect against some of this stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. And interesting thing is I have a very polite woman call me and give me some advice, knowing that I'm fairly new to this fight and this cause. And she told me, and I'll just relay what she told me, is go on the internet and try to remove all your information that you can. There's sites and there's services that can help you delete your addresses, your phone numbers, things like that. Because you're right, doxing is a scary thing. I helped these two ladies here locally who were at a Team Pride event at a library, and they were kicked out, and LGBTQ were outside waiting for them, took pictures of them, and just plastered things all over the internet, and it was pretty traumatic for them. And I think that's pretty commonplace now. I think it's really important that if people want to get involved in this, they need to take all the precautions they can and also talk about it with their family. That is one of the first conversations potential clients that we have. And we sit down and say, are you ready for what could come from this? You know, probably face persecution from the internet, phone, your coworkers, your family, even your friends. You know, that's covered in the Bible. So some people are willing and ready to do that.
How about for like homeschool parents that might be considering pulling their kids out of public school, going to private school? I mean, what are some things that they can do to protect themselves?
In what way exactly?
Well, you know, you have a lot of parents. Well, let me just back up then a little bit. You have parents that want to keep their kids in public school, and there are some protections that probably they need right off the top. But you also have folks that are coming out of public school that are going into the homeschool movement, and sometimes they are running into CPS. They're running into, that teaching, religious values at homes is somehow harmful to kids. How can people protect themselves, particularly against CPS charges or false CPS charges in the one venue? And then if they're going into public school as well, and they feel like they have to stay and keep their kids in public school, how can they protect their kids in that venue too?
Sure. We have actually a great resource on our website, pji.org, for parents. They can go on there and download our opt-out form, which pretty much takes care of everything they would want to have their kids taken out of. They just go through there, check out every box, sign it, send it certified. They are required to do it every year. And also there's sex ed education, and there's also Healthy Youth Act. It's a little confusing, but parents just need to be aware of their material that their children bring home. They're probably at some point going to get a little flyer from the school, maybe snuck in there nice and tight, that they're going to hold a curriculum preview night, and children are required to have their parents go attend this before they can be removed from it. I know there was an incident here in Washington State where the school actually forgot to do that completely. Parents found out, made a big stink about it, and all they said was, "We're sorry, we won't do it again." But of course, the child was exposed to material that the parents did not want. And so that's a big problem too. So parents need to be involved. They can also hop onto what are called committees that they review curriculum. So there's opportunity for parents to actually see what schools are trying to teach their kids, have a voice, and be a part of that. In regards to CPS, that is concerning, and that's actually something we're getting involved in now more. It's not something we're full on in yet, but we do have one case where what's happening now is CPS can come in and say, well, you're not supporting or endorsing your child's gender identity. We find this to be, I think it's neglect, child neglect or abuse or both, and we're getting to the point where they could take your child away for that. You'd see that could apply in education as well if you're trying to teach your child that they're maybe confused or mistaken and this gets out. And as we know, there's social justice warriors on the other side too who feel like they are called or heroes to save these children from their parents, which is just craziness to me, but that's where we're at right now. So parents need to be on top of that, and we do help with that. Brad Dacus, that's one of his specialties, is he gets involved before CPS takes any action. So if anyone is worried about that or in the middle of that, they've been contacted by CPS and they're considering coming over to their home and seeing what's going on, they should definitely call us and ask for Brad, and he would help them out.
And lastly, we have a lot of evangelists and activists that are out there right now. The church at Planned Parenthood here in Spokane, it's taking off nationally. They're popping up all over the place now. And sometimes, these activists can, be set up for a violation of a noise ordinance or something like that. What can they do to protect themselves when they go out to evangelize or they go out to minister at places like Planned Parenthood?
Yeah, there's really, the best thing they can do is prepare. You can contact us maybe a week or two before, but really check out the ordinances for the street that you're on. I think most, and one of my clients, he actually emailed a prosecutor and asked, hey, I'm planning to do this. I really want to be within the bounds. Now, if they give a really illegitimate, if they give you small little boundaries that seem illegal, obviously that's where you need to contact us and have us review it. We can't even write letters before it takes place. Hey, this group is planning to go. This is what they're going to do. We expect their liberties, their freedoms to be respected in this circumstance. And typically we have pretty good success with that. But, it's really comes down to the forum, public forum, and if they're engaged in First Amendment protected rights. And the state has a big burden to infringe upon that. And typically, as we saw here in Afshin's case, judges tend to side on our liberties to protect them. Even, you know, this was a big one because we're concerned about the LGBTQ, you know, that side of it, and there's a lot of politics involved there, and we just wanted to, we made it all about the law. You know, Afshin was allowed to be there, and he should have been allowed to go in the library, and he was separated by, treated wrongly because of his beliefs.
Jorge, you guys are doing a great job at PJI. If people want to know more about you or they want to go access some of the resources, where can they go on the internet?
Yeah, if they just want to go to PJI, as in Pacific Justice Institute, .org, they can go there. We have state-specific forums. Obviously, Washington is most applicable here, but if you know they have anyone else they want to send to our website, they can also send inquiries via our website if they think, you know, if they have a student who's not being allowed to share his faith or was disciplined for his faith, employees, employers, anyone who has something, just shoot us an inquiry. We respond within 24, 48 hours, and we're ready to file a lawsuit or just be there to we're here to reinforce people's rights, to make them feel confident that they can live out their faith and not be scared all the time.
And in the last couple minutes, I've had recently several young people contact me and say, "Hey, I want to be an attorney. I want to practice constitutional law. I want to help defend Christians." You know, do you know anybody that can take in interns and do that? Do you guys have an internship program, or if young people want to go through law school and they really are passionate about this area of the law and they want to join PJI, how does that work?
Yeah, as you mentioned, we just opened our office here a year ago. We're still building up. Our plan is hopefully to take on interns and grow, and you know we are growing. But if they wanted to get involved with PJI, we have, I think, 4 or 5 offices in California, and I know we have interns there, and we give them lots of work and have offices spread all over. But we love volunteers as well. You know, so if some would-be lawyers want to help us or just look over some of the materials, we're more than welcome to reach out to us. And, you know, I've already let a few people job shadow me here in Seattle. So we love to promote the cause and help inspiring attorneys.
Well, great job and keep up the great work. Jorge Ramos, Seattle Office Director for the Pacific Justice Institute. Thanks once again for joining me on Patriot Radio. And just, you know, you're so encouraging because these are wins. These are real wins that are affecting real people and helping us expand the kingdom of Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much, Matt. God bless.
All right. God bless. Jorge Ramos, Pacific Justice Institute. You can go check out PJI online. And if you haven't ever heard of them, go look. I mean, they have tons of resources. If you're a homeschool mom or you have to keep your kids in public school, there are a ton of resources to help you be protected when you go out there as a Christian, living your Christianity beyond the four walls of the church, and educating the next generation. And as I said earlier in the show, you know, I have these screen captures of Antifa quite literally advocating weaponizing CPS against Trump supporters. Well, that's against Christians as well, and trying to paint Christians in a terrible light. And so, as you heard, you know, Brad Dacus, who's the head of PJI, that's kind of one of their specialties, is intervening so that CPS doesn't take children from people and do it based on, you know, a belief system. It's interesting with the Marxists that there is no tolerance, right, except for the Marxist ideology, everything else goes away. And, you know, Vladimir Lenin said that would be the case, that they shouldn't allow diverging viewpoints. Why would they ever do that? Karl Marx talks about this. Folks, that's evil, to squash other ideas, but particularly to go after Christianity. And in the movie last night, Tortured for Christ, Richard Wurmbrand very clearly says that socialism, communism, is an evil system. And we can hate the evil system, but we can also love the man. And I think we need to keep that really at the forefront of everything that we do as Christians, that in America, we do still have the unalienable right to bear arms in defense of ourself and in prevention of tyranny. And the United States Supreme Court actually said in the prevention of tyranny. And it's interesting that the United States Supreme Court, in a case called West Virginia Board of Education versus Barnett, and this is back in 1943, but the Supreme Court has cited this case many times here recently, said this, quote, "No official, high or petty, can prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or matters of opinion," end quote. This case was cited, interestingly, in the Janus case, which dealt with free association, and also the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, which dealt with freedom of religion. So when you have people coming after Christians and trying to weaponize the system, they are violating this United States Supreme Court recognized principle. The Supreme Court got this one right. And I think we need to keep reiterating that wherever we possibly can go. The folks who are aligning themselves, who are sympathizing with, who are giving material support for Marxist organizations in this country, we can hate the Marxism, but we still need to love them, forgive them, and bless them, despite all of the nasty things that they may do against us. But as Americans too, we must hold the line on truth and righteousness so that our kids and our grandkids can live free. This is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio. May God bless all of you, and may He make this generation the greatest one.